Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Good to be with you and good to be with our listeners out there in, what are we going to call it? Radio land?
Oh, yeah, it's cyberland.
I don't know.
I called it cyberland.
Oh, that'll work. Oh, that sounds very good. Yeah.
Now, my question for you today is the yield curve has uninverted. What does that tell us, or does it tell us anything?
No, it doesn't matter. A key thing on the yield curve is that it inverted in March a year ago. And by inversion, you mean that short rates got higher than long rates. And that is a sign of intense financial and business speculation. Now, the Chinese economy is in a contraction, but the U.S. is not. There's extraordinary things going on in the U.S. One was the COVID lockdown, which is extraordinary. So I've argued that people are just trying to get back to normal out of that lockdown is helping things immensely. And then maybe even the Biden administration's reckless import of any kind of immigrant in is kind of helping the economy. But historically, when you've reached a business and financial climax, usually the outlying regions fail first. And rather than, you know, decades ago, London was the financial center, and the failures would appear in Europe or wherever, and then eventually it would get London, and then, you know, for the last 70, 80 years, New York has been the financial center. But China is in deep doo-doo, and that is, you can call it an outlying market, although it's huge. It's still an outlying market, and it's a standard issue whereby the boom begins to fail in outlying countries, then eventually hits the financial center. So this is sort of coming along. So the two extraordinary events are probably in the market, one the rebound out of COVID, and the other this extraordinary and massive and reckless importation of migrants. Of course, the reason why the Democrats are doing it is that it's bringing in voters. You know, bring in poor people, take existing workers' taxation and set them up in a comfortable lifestyle, and they'll vote for you, won't they? So this is the yield curve. I would have great faith in that. I've got the curve back to 1857. And every inversion has been followed by a recession. So we're staying with that one. And it looks like the recession has started outside of the U.S. in other countries.
Yeah, the U.S. GDP went up 3.3% in the fourth quarter. They predicted 2%. And consumer confidence in the last 2 weeks has also skyrocketed in the U.S. But credit card debt is really blossoming.
That's quite the word for it, yes.
Yeah. So they're confident that everything's going to keep going, yet Levi Strauss, your big blue jeans maker, well, I guess things are tight there because they're laying off 15% of their staff.
Yeah.
And then high-tech firms are cutting as well.
Yeah, I saw something about the high-tech was having a reduction as well. So, yeah, I think we're just at the point for rolling over. Now, there's a market phenomenon that I really like, and that is that you can have an exceptional move, bubble up, and complete in January. And examples in the past would have been in 1989 with the incredible bubble in the Tokyo market where the Nikkei went to the moon and the Japanese speculators were buying everything around the world. And that completed on the last trading day of 1989, and then Japan went into a very long deflation. And then another one was in, I think it was January the 10th, 1973, when then the New York stock market peaked. And I think the bear market was 45%. And and that was down to December of 1974. When that market, bear market, cleared. And it's always interesting to point out that it took until 1987 to get back to the 1973 high. Hey, that's a serious hit in the equity markets. So here we are. We have now the excesses were, you got the uranium stocks, and the cryptos played for a bit, but they gave up a while ago. But what happened with this one was that all of a sudden the broad stock market, the S&P, got captured up in this as well. So it looks like we've got one of these outstanding move completions being completed in January. And of course, with this, our technical work with Ross Clark, all kinds of excesses on the upside, we call them trifectas, when you're getting the technical excesses on the monthly, weekly, and daily readings on this. So this is working out. Such a move was possible. And it has to get excesses to complete. Excesses are there, and then it could roll over. So, it's highly dangerous market, but gosh, it sure became convincing. Really strong moves in the broad stock market, and as well as in like the specific groups, the uraniums, which were going up parabolic and then straight up. Now these are really up to a trifecta of excesses. So we'd watch for that. Now there's another aspect to the uraniums, is that the bulls who are buying the stocks are correct that there will be a terrific expansion of nuclear-powered electrical plants. But what they're expecting is all of that nuclear fuel is going to be mined, and therefore you want to be long Cameco and the other miners as well. But the new modular electrical plants, they can use old stockpiles of uranium. So, yes, there will be a tremendous expansion of nuclear-powered electrical plants, but it may not need the mined uranium that the bulls are up about. So it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Two headlines here that are connected from CNBC. When the Fed cuts rates, markets could see more upside, but Barron says stocks are in trouble because Fed rate cuts aren't coming yet.
Yeah, that's a big issue. I remember I got a very good headline out of that in September 2007. Now, that was a powerful stock market, and it peaked in that October. So anyways, a pundit with a major fund manager said that the Fed is going to cut rates and it will certainly support the stock market. And this is where I grabbed those headlines this time, because the bulls are convinced that interest rates are going to go down, the Fed cuts, and that'll help the stock market. Now, if you take a look at the 6 month T-bill in the U.S., it set its high in the middle of August. And it's already in a downtrend. It's down something like 50 basis points. And the Fed is still talking about whether to hold or to cut rates. But the point is that short-dated interest rates go up with the boom. They are a positive indicator. And then with the bust, short-dated interest rates go down. So, and actually, we put together a chart the other day looking with the Fed rates and S&P. And one of the things about it is that the fastest drops in the stock market occur with the fastest drops in short dated in short rates. So they will learn, but the notion now that Fed cuts will help the stock markets is absolutely erroneous, just plain dead wrong. Because short rates always fall with a contraction. But that's short rates, like T-bills. And, of course, the Fed always follows what T-bills are doing. But then you have a problem out there with a slowing economy. And how can a slowing economy help corporations service their debt eagerly taken on during the bubble? So this is where I did it years ago, is you take real long interest rates. So it's, the 10-year Treasury adjusted for inflation. And at each bubble, the real interest rates have gone down with the bubble. And they were down to a minus 0.60 a year and a half ago. And now they're up to kind of 3. And people are complaining about the rise in interest rates as being costly. Well, you can, let's say that the rise in real interest rates for the 10-year, let's say it's up 3 percentage points now. But historically, in the full post-bubble crash, the real long rate has gone up by 10 percentage points, and it's up 3 and people are sweating it now. My God, wait till it gets to being up 10 percentage points. And this is, of course, what it's happened. I've got the interest rates on each bubble back to the first one in 1720, South Sea bubble. Then you had, 1873 was another bubble year, 1929, and then now the bubble year, I guess, could be said as 2022. So, so this is where we advise people, and going into a post-bubble contraction to have minimal debt and not to be long junk bonds or long-dated treasuries. An ideal position would be in 3 to 4 year term good grade U.S. corporates. You'd get some return, whereas T-bills and various deposit rates are going to go to zero. You've locked in a fair return out of some good grade corporates. So, and then, you know, if you've got a 3 year maturity, the company's going to be paying them off. And if you have good grade ones, the chances are that the company will be paying them off. So, and then the other sector that does very well in a post-bubble contraction are the golds. Because what happens typically is as most prices deflate following a bubble, those prices going down represent the cost of mining gold. So I use CRB relative to gold as a proxy for costs, and indeed it's working. The costs have been falling relative to the bullion price now for about 6 months. And then there was a study by Sprott I saw just the other day that pointed out that operating gold miners late over the last 6 months, their earnings have been increasing because their costs are not increasing. So this is classic stuff. And I think you can get maybe kind of a double out of this ratio between the bullion price and the cost of mining. Then another one we like to talk about, of course, is that mining costs, about 60% are energy. And there you got crude oil. You know, you've got to run all those huge earth movers and trucks, and even blasting agents relate to crude oil. And you got to run the mill and all that sort of stuff. So, and price of crude has been weaker than the CRB relative to the bullion price. So this is very constructive for the sector. But there are times when if you get a major hit in the S&P, it'll hit the gold stocks. But our view was last October to begin accumulating gold stocks and to get a really good position in them, and then just ride it out, see where it goes. And I think it'd be like the 1930s, where most of industry, agriculture, and commerce were not doing well. But because of that, gold mining costs were constrained, and the gold miners made a lot of money. And it seems to be Mother Nature's way of getting real money into the banking system. The real price of gold goes up, miners mine more of it, and it eventually gets into circulation. So it's Mother Nature at work. Let's use that term.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, we'll take a look at some of the headlines that are affecting the Chinese economy. The first one, China, after $6.3 trillion in market losses, they have now suspended short selling.
Oh, yeah. That's officialdom acting, you know, knee-jerk sort of thing. Yeah, they think that the market is going to go up forever, and then you get a major hit. And then they discover that, hey, there's been some short sellers who might have made some money out of it, so they don't like that. So, yeah, that's a classic. But, you know, $6.3 trillion and market losses. You know, it's a big number.
China's got a lot of people, but not 6.3 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
China stock sell-off worsens as Hong Kong index nears 19-year low.
Yeah, that last part is key because I hadn't looked at the Hong Kong index for ages. And then you see a headline, 19-year low for the Hong Kong index. That's serious stuff.
Now, there was a time Hong Kong used to account for something like 20% of the Chinese economy, even though it's, 7 million people, something like that?
Yeah.
But then once the Chinese government moved in and slowly started to remove democracy, they said we're going to become less reliant on Hong Kong. Well, you take away freedom from people, you also take away their creativity, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, it's been Hong Kong and Taiwan that have created the freedom and the boom in the provinces adjoining. And, of course, the communists up in Beijing have been enjoying the prosperity, and they're about to get shocked, I would expect. But, I think that China has made great strides in becoming free again. And, of course, we go back to the 1920s when Shanghai was the financial market in the East. And there's interesting stories about that one, too. So, but nonetheless, the Chinese financial market is failing, and there's nothing anybody can do about it.
I've heard Taiwan has warned China that if you attempt to invade, we're just going to blow up all of those computer chip plants you desperately want.
Well, that's a good threat. Yeah, I think Beijing, the communists in Beijing, are going to be stymied because the money's going to go away.
And building artificial cities that are now crumbling and have to be demolished, is this just the Chinese plan continually to build things and then let them deteriorate and rebuild them again?
The most craziest, they even built a city that was a replica of Paris, of downtown Paris. I remember reading about that. And now they got any number of empty apartments, towers, in effectively empty cities. It was a crazy boom.
Did that duplicate Paris also have restaurants with slow and rude service?
Good one, Jim. Yeah.
I remember the deputy mayor of Paris saying he wasn't going to allow a McDonald's to be built next to the Eiffel Tower. And I said, that's right. Why should you have hot food served quickly with service with a smile in Paris? It would just take away from the experience where you can wait 2.5 hours for a glass of wine.
Well, I've been to a French Parisian restaurant in Tokyo where the servers were all dressed in black tie tuxedos. Just, you know.
And it was good service, wasn't it?
To the nth degree, and it was very expensive, but man, it was beautifully done.
Well, Paris was expensive, by the way, was added for your convenience. So, it certainly wasn't for service.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, in many European restaurants, the waiter all keeps count of the number of rolls in the bread basket and makes a note if you had one. So, yeah.
Kind of like the Roboto thing. With sushi, where they keep count of what you ate.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was one downtown Vancouver years ago where you sat at the counter, and it had a little trough of water, and it had little boats all circulating along, and the chef guys were in the middle making the sushis and loading up each one, and then as it went past, you lifted up the little plate and had made your selection. And then at the end of it, they calculated the bill by how many little empty plates you had there.
Headline from CNBC. It's really bad. China strategist warns of deflation and rock-bottom consumer confidence.
That says it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So what can China do to make things better? Or do they
Nothing.
Just have to write it out?
As any, all of these bubbles, they come along and they blow out, and then you go into about 20 years of price, dead prices, deflationary prices. Now, their usual business cycle, 3 to 4 year business cycle, comes and goes, but the recessions are severe and the recoveries are weak. And that's goes on five previous examples. Four out of the last five examples you had that case. It's going to be a new world.
And from the Wall Street Journal headline, desperate Chinese property developers resort to bizarre market tactics.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what those tactics are, Bob?
I didn't take the time to read it. I just took it as a note saying these guys are desperate. So they're trying everything they can.
Well, I remember here when we've had downturns, we'll give you a new car if you buy a house from us.
Yeah, yeah.
Cars are more expensive nowadays. Although, I guess in relative ratio to the house price, cars are cheaper.
Well, especially in Vancouver.
Oh, yes, especially in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Where if you look for anything under $1 million, you're going to keep looking forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although both Vancouver and Toronto have seen prices fall. The only city that saw prices go up was Calgary.
I think the big spike up has been done. Yeah. So.
For a while.
It's for just, a while.
And in Vancouver, Greater Vancouver is now 3 million people.
Wow, I hadn't seen that number for a while.
That came up yesterday. Yeah, we're at the 3 million mark.
Yeah.
When I moved here in 82, it was 1 million.
Yeah.
So a couple of more people have moved here since then.
Yes. Well, it's a very pleasant place to live.
Not too hot, not too cold. Just a little
wet.
You
just have to get used to the rain.
Yeah.
And the winter months.
Yeah, that can be a bit gloomy, but that's when we head off to Hawaii, where it's the rainy season. But it's warm rain.
Right.
And when we get what we used to call Pineapple Expresses and now Atmospheric Rivers.
Atmospheric Rivers is a much better term, yeah.
Yeah, but we call them Pineapple Expresses because they came up from the area of Hawaii, and it's warm rain.
Yeah.
It brings the temperature up to 10 degrees on average or 50 Fahrenheit.
I never saw any of the Pineapple Expresses actually delivering a pineapple.
I never did either. I was hoping they would smell like Hawaiian tropic suntan oil, and they never did.
Yeah.
Bob, always fun to chat.
Yep. Look forward to next week, Jim.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, he loves to answer them. Send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.